Half cat, cat, corp, corp, corp.
We have here a letter from a nice lady who writes from Staten Island. By God, is there a Staten Island? She writes from Staten Island. I suspect there is a Staten Island. And since she does write on blue stationery with purple ink, I have to assume that's a certain type of lady. You know, the tennis shoes, cats, you know, blackstrap molasses, acupuncture, you know, the whole bit. And she says, Dear Mr. Shepherd, I don't like to criticize people, but my husband, Charles, often has remarked that your program has, well, the way he puts it, and it's certainly not my words, but I must agree with him, a ridiculous, doggonest theme that I've ever heard. And it certainly isn't in keeping with the dignity of the kind of program that I know you're attempting to create. It certainly works against it. Take this as a word from one who is concerned with your future and your welfare. A word to the wise, you know. Signed, a John Gambling fan.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Herb. Cut it. And we've been looking, this has been brought to my attention several times. In fact, a drunken salesman came up to me the other day at the Christmas party, and he had his hand firmly clasped over what looked like at least a quart and a half of scotch. A fantastic glass. I don't know where they get these gigantic glasses. This glass was so big that he had to have a shoulder holster to keep it upright, you know. And he comes up to me, I said, yes. The trouble with you is you don't sell. I said, well, coming from him, it was kind of funny. However, nevertheless, we had this, you know, from time to time, brought to our attention that this theme, as we often laughingly refer to it, does not indeed, in fact, convey the depth of feeling and the probity of the program which we create nightly. I assume that many of you must agree with this. So we've been looking around for a suitable replacement for that theme. And I think we've come across a magnificent replacement. And I'd like to put it up to the listeners out there. I believe totally in participating democracy, you know, to participate. Democracy has often been described by many political pundits throughout the ages, including such greats as Aristotle and the late Dorothy Kilgallen. It's been pointed out that democracy consists really in the ultimate sense of a large ravening mob of people all shouting. Well, that's there's some truth to that. And since we believe in that large ravening mob with people shouting, we'd like to hear from the mob out there. Now, this lady made her wants and desires known, and I say that's fine. This is, you know, we would like to hear that. The mob, of course, and the voice of the mob, oftentimes is incoherent, usually incoherent with rage. Now, it does not necessarily mean that the rage is justified, nor even logically called for. But rage itself seems to be part of the essence or the spirit of that incalculable mob. Anyway, how many times have you been present when you heard somebody in the back call, This is the cry of democracy, inchoate, containing large amounts of raging passion, yet very little logic. Don't ever let logic get in the way of passion or rage. So tonight, we would like to put this up before the ravening mob. Let's hear from you. A telephone call, card, a wire, a brick through the window. Whichever is your thing, certainly we're not going to stand in the way of your style, which, as inelegant as it might be, certainly is your style. You know those, you've seen those the TV commercials you have? Have you seen the one with the insurance company that says,
there's only one person like you, and it shows the guy bawling and the lady with the things going up and down, you know, she bawls, and then they stop. Yes, there's only one like you, with your inimitable style. Certainly there's only one. Well, by God, maybe that's for the better. Now that I come to think of it. Did I ever tell you about the girl, speaking of inimitable style, did I ever tell you about the girl I used to date? And it wasn't until late in the summer, after we'd been dating for about 8 months, before I even got to the beach, that I discovered she had webbed feet. And it was her style. She'd swim like hell. But outside of that, she later went on to win a bronze at Aachen, I believe it was, in the Olympics. But six of one, half a dozen of the other, we have been looking around for a suitable replacement to our theme. There had been, let's face it, the pomposity factor in our civilization of today is important. Ed McMahon represents a kind of collective pomposity for the world in general. He can do an Alpo dog food commercial that gives you the feeling that it was made in the Taj Mahal for small carved ivory dogs. That's kind of a nice image, isn't it? Thank God we're on tonight. However, six of one, half a dozen the other, I say, though, that the voice of the mob, as inchoate as it is, must be heard. I've heard that voice many times, shouting in rage from Section 12, way up there, back of the posts, in the third tier, where no football game can be seen by the naked eye. But nevertheless, the voice... We're doing it for all of you. It's part of our public service programming out here. If your voice is a little off this season, we have 50,000 big, fat, vibrating RF watts. George, it's a lot of power, friends. Yes, sir. And we can do it for all of you. However, we have been looking for a suitable replacement theme. After all, it's almost the end of the year. We'd like to start out the new year with a spring in our step. Incidentally speaking, New York is fantastic. I mean, it really is. You've heard this so many times. The other day, I'll tell you what I saw. The other day, I'm walking along, going west on 32nd Street. It's an interesting neighborhood. And I am nearing Park Avenue. Friends, that's in it. No, it was further up north. No, it was about 37th Street nearing Park. Yes, this is the high rent district. Yes, indeed, the high rollers are there. And I'm walking west on 37th Street. I'm coming up the park, and I see two guys wearing Chesterfields. Now, you don't see many Chesterfields. You know what a Chesterfield is? A long black coat, you know, with a velvet collar. Chesterfields, elegant-looking gentlemen, foulards, the whole bit. And what do you think they're doing? I couldn't believe what I'm seeing. They are hopping up and down on pogo sticks. I'm serious. And they were looking at each other's form. The guy goes up and down. The other guy stands over and watches him. And then he says, wait. Then he goes back, and I'm across the street. You know, I had a feeling that the Jack Nicklaus of pogo sticks was instructing a neophyte. But, you know, you pick it up where you can, and you work the way you can, you know. So anybody who says Shepherd isn't relevant, what the hell is relevant? I've never... Now, oh, by the way, the word relevant is very important. The word relevant can be defined today as that which I am interested in. Okay? And only that. All the other is irrelevant, ridiculous blatherskite. What the hell is blather? It just came out of the head. But however, here, now, let's hear. We've got to hear from the voice of the ravening mob. And here is the theme which, after a great amount of work, we have finally selected. And it's in keeping with what we call the dynamic pomposity factor of today. Now, what is the pomposity factor? Almost every major author today, for example, would never be a major author unless he proclaimed to the world that he was, in fact, a major author. I saw Norman Mailer the other day being interviewed by one of the worst books, probably, of the 20th century. This Marilyn Monroe, a terrible book. Oh, one of the worst books. And when questioned about the fact that he had never met Marilyn Monroe, had never even been within 5 miles of Marilyn Monroe, and yet, he, you know, it did not stop him. He said, it is a work of art I have created. At which point the interviewer was a little bit taken aback and says, a work of art? He says, yes, it is a work of art because I, Norman Mailer, created it. How the hell can you answer that? That is dynamic pomposity in action, our new theme.
General Tire Corporation and WOR Radio takes great pleasure in bringing to the American people a voice. Yes, a voice among millions. Yet a voice that speaks of the hopes and the aspirations of all the men of his time. Author, magnificent actor, and a splendid person. A special production of our Public Service Division of the RKO General Corporation. Brought to you in wide range electronic transistorized sound. Filtered to give you high fidelity from 30 to 30,000 cycles. A voice that is destined to speak for all of us. And now, here is the star.
Hello, gang. Hey, George.
That does it. That does it. It really does. I feel different. Since time began, every major
demagogue has realized that the uniforms, echo chambers, bullhorns,
this is an absolute necessity. An absolute necessity. Do you think that you would watch Johnny Carson for 12 minutes if he was on Channel 47 in black and white? Do you?
With two guys playing washboards and another guy playing a hillbilly fiddle as his band?
No, you of course would not.
The pomposity factor is a necessity in our time.
Interviewers and special agents bring you the world. And at the focal point of this vast network of news gathering agencies, bringing you the pulse, the times, the sound, and the sense of the 20th century fast, hard-hitting world of news. Walter Cronkite.
My God. You see what a little production will do? This is WOR New York. Oh, come on. That was bad. We got to do this better. Give me a little echo chamber. A real big, broad echo chamber.
Pow, 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 pow.
That's a station break. And now How about a commercial, Herbert?
The world's greatest magicians perform at the World Festival of Magic and the Occult, the weirdest show on earth. An unforgettable experience. Bring the whole family. You can hold each other's hands. The World Festival of Magic and the Occult, the weirdest show on earth.
Wednesday, December 12th through Sunday, December 30th at the Felt Forum in Madison Square Garden Center. For ticket information, call 212-564-4400. Tickets also at Ticketron.
Hey, listen, I'll tell you, if you think this is a joke, any good magician will tell you production is all, friends. In fact, Marcel Proust, I shouldn't bring that up here on the radio, Marcel Proust, who wrote From a Cork-Lined Room, once made a famous statement, which he regretted shortly thereafter, of course, because it was thrown back at him by two reviewers. He made a statement once that said, in elegant terms, I will try to anglicize it for you, he merely said, style is all. You know, that's one of those things that sounds good. It has absolutely no meaning, but it sounds great, like most aphorisms. He also one time said, vanity, yes, vanity is all. Well, somebody said, well, just a couple of days ago, you said, style is all, Marcel. He said, yes, but that was a couple of days ago. Which, incidentally, was later printed, too. That statement was printed, and it was later distributed on calendars. So, would you please give us another goody, Herb, please?
Before the holidays get here, it's time to think about giving Dubonnet. The time to drink Dubonnet is before meals. The time to give Dubonnet is now during the holidays. Take some along to a friend's home next time you drop in. And give someone the gift of wine this season. If they're good friends, they'll open it and offer you a Dubonnet. Dubonnet, America's best-selling before-dinner wine.
Yeah.
Dubonnet Company, New York, New York.
Yeah, Dubonnet. Speaking of Xmas... it's WOR Children's Christmas Fun time again. Once again, Box 710, if you'd like to send a check off. That's the name of the play. No, that's terrible. If you would like to send off a check. God, I don't know what's the matter with me. There are certain times when the in your head, you know, have you ever had the punning problem in your head? When you begin to invent indescribably rancid puns in your head, just constantly... Like I said, send a check off. And immediately I said, Uncle Vanya, address it to... Oh, you got it. Oh, I knew you would. I like a literate crowd. Right, George? Yes, indeed. I said, send your check to Uncle Vanya. You know? Oh, what a soak he was. But nevertheless, WOR Children's Christmas Fund, Box 710, Times Square Station, New York, 10036. And a little note here, WOR is going to repeat a special tribute to the late Martha Dean, or Marion Young, on Sunday, December 16th at 10:15 a.m. I would like to have been part of that, but like so many things... You know, seriously, jesting aside, though, I knew a guy... No, you know, this is a recognized psychological... illness. There are two illnesses that are very rare, but man, when they get you, I've seen guys that have been sucked in by them. They can't stop it. And one of them is the rhyming syndrome. Now that is really a psychological problem. It really is. Well, there are several very interesting problems that the psychologists have isolated recently. That the problem you even run into, and you didn't know that they were a problem. Do you know that there's one now that has gotten a great deal of publicity recently? Did you hear about the obscenity disease, where people cannot stop hurling obscenities? I mean, the most straight-laced people, all of a sudden, they holler and they say, "Oh, great Scott!"
And they can't stop it. Did you know that? You've never heard of that one? Well, you probably have worked with guys like that. You didn't know it was a sickness. You just thought, you know, it was he had a mind that was mildewed, you know, or something like that. But nevertheless, there is a sickness where people cannot stop saying fantastic obscenities at the worst times. And, they wind up, I don't know what they give them for it, X-lax or something, but the point is that it is a treatable disease. Then there's another one, the rhyming disease. I knew a guy one time who could not talk to you, seriously. I even remember his name because he made such an impression on me. Just an ordinary-looking guy. And he could not speak to you unless he was speaking in rhyme. And he did it like as if it was a funny, you know, always like he was being funny. Like, he'd say, you know, the most obvious things. He'd say things like, hey, is that your paper cup? If you don't watch out, I'll trip you up. Ha, 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 ha. Oh, I says, come on, Bill, will you cut it out, for God's sakes? Yes. I cut it out. I've been a lout yesterday. And you'd say, oh, come on, Bill, stop it. Well, he made it into a career. In fact, this guy did a radio show where he did nothing but rhyme stuff. He would sit there, and he was a DJ, and he would come between the records, you know, come on, and he would rhyme everything. Well, it was a sickness. He couldn't help it. He it was just always there. That one, the rhyming thing, and the worst of all is the punning thing. Now, guys have even got international reputations as wits with this. This is a... And you know, the funny thing about puns, the pun is so controversial that some people love puns, you know. But they're always embarrassed when they laugh at them because they know secretly that it is a sin against nature. It is a crime against sensibility and taste. They do. The guy that laughs at puns always goes, ha, 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 George, I love a pun. Ha, 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 George. He's doing it, though, with a little look of guilt in his eye. It's just a kind of intellectual guilt. Now, there's the other kind of person who gets offended the minute you come out with a pun. Absolutely. You get enraged. Lee is like that. Lee gets enraged. He won't talk for hours after you come up with a pun. And it's a great pun. You can come up with a great one. The greatest punsters recognize that they do have their moments of inspired... Well, you can call it greatness, or you can call it the inspired depravity, depending on how you look at it. Because depravity, too, can be an art form. And eventually, by the 20th century, will be celebrated as such. The French have celebrated depravity. They have. In fact, there's an entire theater based on that. Depravity, violence, blood, guts. You know, this. It's fantastic theater. If you ever go there, you'll never forget it. You'll never go back again, but you'll never forget it. You're like a good juicy axe murder there before your eyes. All right, you know. But we have our moments of inspired punning, and I came up with one about 2-3 years ago. How long ago it was. Just came out one night. It was terrible. I admit it was terrible. It was later reprinted in the Times, but I was never credited. Do you remember when Aristotle Onassis was home? Was around looking for a home. You recall that one? Okay. Don't you remember that? Looking at a home of Buster. It was a pin. he was looking. He was. I read a little note in the paper that Aristotle Onassis was looking for a home, and among other places he looked at was Buster Keaton's ex-Taj Mahal on the West Coast. So immediately the pun came up. Aristotle examining a home of Buster. That was terrible. I'm sorry. I mean, you know, I'm sorry. Of course, you'd have to know about the famous bust of Homer. I was ashamed of it immediately. I came out with this thing, and immediately I apologized. If you recall, and if you heard it, I apologized abjectly. Do you recall that? I apologized profusely, and I'll be damned if the New York Times the next day didn't print it with absolutely no apology. That's the way, you know. No credit line either, I might add.
In 10 years, of course, that'll be credited to Groucho Marx, you know, an official wit, or a W.C. Fields or something like that. Do you recall, you know, one of the but there was a guy in the early days of television who came on, speaking of trivia. All right, now we'll bring up the trivia of the punster world. This is a real in-bit of trivia. What character... he had a curious quality of pomposity about him. The kind of the Donish pomposity. You know what I mean by Donish pomposity? It's the kind of pomposity that Alistair Cook has. Yes, he's carried pomposity to a fine art, really. Only in America, by the way, would we go to get... America's a fantastic country. Only in America would they get an Englishman to do the official program called America. That's so classically American. And then it's official. I mean, if you got an American to do it, somehow it wouldn't have the ring of truth and officialdom. Can you imagine England doing a show called The Empire, and they get Shepard to do it? You know, the history, no way. But it's very, very logical to American intellectuals to rush to England to get an Englishman to play Abe Lincoln in Illinois. The really definitive Lincoln would be, say, Laurence Olivier. That would... Can you imagine the old Vic coming to America to get Dustin Hoffman to play Richard III? Forget it. Only in America. But, you know, we got a great country, so you have to accept it for what it is. And I, one of the things that our country does, you know, we have a curious quality of intellectual, feeling of intellectual. You can pick up the paper any day, and you know that you're reading about an English actor the minute that you see rave reviews. Almost every critic believes that an English actor is, by definition, a superb actor. Oh, boy. I have been in the presence of some English actors that made the Armour Swift Ham Company look like they were producing caviar. But they had an English accent. And somehow, that's official. So I have to apologize for that pun that I came up with. I really do. And I would like to know, though, before we leave the subject, because very important to me, I'd like to know whether or not you like our new theme. I want to hear whether we should keep this. Do you like that? Do you like it, Jerry? Well, we've got 3 positive votes there. So if you like the theme that which we have selected, incidentally, if you're curious about the theme, it's a very rare piece of music. Would you please bring it on? It's called Magnificence and Power Through the Ages. Which, you know, it's kind of right, I think. After all, I've got 50,000 watts here in RKO behind me, so that's a hell of a wall. Bring that up there, Greg. Oh, yeah, this is unbelievable. It's fantastic. I mean, a heavenly chorus coming out of heaven. Didn't you just see the lights coming on? And this vast 200-foot stage? And the gold lame curtain is going back. And this endless file of what looks like Nubian slaves coming on dressed in leopard skin, carrying esoteric banners, waving spears. Oh, my God. And we'd have to have this photograph with the backdrop of the pyramids behind it. A slight hint of the Sphinx off to the left. The 7 great wonders of the world. The 8th has just now arrived. Yes, mankind has celebrated the 7 wonders of the world. The giant of Crete. The vast curve of the Golden Horn. And now, in our time, we are pleased and honored to present the 8th wonder of the world. Oh, my God, I am. Oh, yeah, I love that. Would you please give me another? Because this is one of my favorite LPs. I don't have many favorite LPs, but when things are really getting dreary, you know, down in that, we have fantastic offices here at the station. I've got one. How many of you enjoy antiques? How many of you enjoy antiques? You know, one of the new bits with antiques is to take something that's an antique and make it into something modern. Like, say, for example, you get an 1810 butter churn, and you turn it into a television set. That's considered very hip. Yeah, it is. It really is. I know a guy that has an 1847 duck decoy, tremendous looking duck. It's, you know, it's kind of, and he's put a clock in one end and an FM radio on the other end. I ain't going to tell you which end has got which, and he's very proud of it. And this is a big thing. Here at the station, we've taken cognizance of that, and the office I have is a reconverted 1910 Madison Avenue phone booth. And it's beautiful. They're very, very tiny. You know, the people were much smaller in those days than they are now. This was a phone booth for people who averaged 5'3" and weighed 22 pounds. And, yes, you know, it was diet. They didn't eat much in those days. And what they did eat, they ate straw, pieces of wax paper and stuff. So, I'm very proud of our office, and so when I get in the office, I've got the only office that I have two other people work with me, see, and we have to work in it in shifts. We take turns, you know. Yeah, we have a little thing out in front of it, you know, the kind of thing you get in the butcher's place, you know, you pull the number, and you wait out there, and when your number comes in, you go and you make a phone call or, you know, read a memo, and then you get up and you go, and the next guy goes in. Well, when that can get a little depressing. So the other day I was hunched down under the little desk. We have a tiny desk in the office, great little desk, and I must again say that I have to admire the creativity of the decorator department here, because I don't know where they got that tiny little dollhouse roll top desk. It's beautiful. It's really lovely. One of these places down on Third Avenue there where they sell antique toys, it's great. But you can only get your... It's hard to write or anything on it since it's only 2.5 feet tall. And it's kind of nice. And we've got this little plastic telephone. They didn't give me a real phone, but I do play around with the one that they've given me. It's kind of nice. It's one of these... It's a 1937 children's plastic French phone. And it's kind of nice. I have it made into a pen wiper, and I sit there and I play with the phone. So once in a while, when things get a little depressing in that office, which, as you can understand, you know, after all, people have their moods. And I'm very ashamed that I do, too. I wish I was a man of steel, but I'm not. I get in the office there once in a while, and I'm looking down at my little desk, and I can see Jerry and Lee both looking mad, waiting to get in there, And so I find it difficult sometimes because once in a while it's terrible. Sometimes we both get caught in here at the same time, and indeed we almost got arrested the other day. But nevertheless, there I am in the office there. See, and when things get really depressed, I go next door to the palatial suite, which is occupied by one of the secretaries down the hall there. She's got a fantastic suite. And I don't know what she does, but she's got it all, you know, to loudspeakers and stereo, and she's got a water carafe. I've always felt that if you get one of those little brown water crests with the chrome on the top, that this is the official signature that you finally arrive when the company gives you one of those. You never put anything in it, you know. If you ever drink out of one of those things, you'll probably be drinking 14-year-old swamp water, you know. But nevertheless, to have it there, I love to have one. But she's got one of those on her desk. And what's more, it's got ice in it. I can hear it rattle once in a while. So when I go in there, when she lets me stand around in her office, she does occasionally. And of course, everything in most businesses is all completely 180 degrees out of what the public thinks it should be. Oh, yes. The public probably believes that Johnny Carson has a fantastic office. Oh, no. No, 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 no. The personnel second... assistant clerk, I'll guarantee you, at NBC, who signs the checks to have Johnny Carson's coats cleaned, has an office that makes Johnny Carson's office look like a closet in an apartment in Staten Island. Just the way it is. Everything's backwards in the world of entertainment. So when I go down to the secretary's office, you know, I go in there. I have to be very obsequious. Oh, listen, if you cross a phone operator, I one time saw Jack Parr have a somewhat irritated sound in his voice when talking to one of the telephone operators over at NBC. He damn near got fired. I want to tell you, they ripped the phones right out of his office, and they told him, one more move like that, friend, and it's back to the Italian soup company. And you know what happened to him, of course. That's the secret story of what actually happened to Parr, in case you're interested. One of the phone operators, he picked it up and says, get me Cleveland. She says, who? Who, for? What do you mean? He says, this is Jack Parr. She says, Jack who? He says, Parr. He says, well, who the hell are you? He says, I'm Jack Parr. She says, I don't care who you are. You don't talk to me in that tone, friend. And that ended the ball game. I've seen, yes, that's right. And, of course, you realize that NBC recognizes that it's much more difficult to get a good phone operator than to get an MC. MCs are stretched from here all the way to the Hawaiian Islands and back, waiting in line. But they can't, you know, necessity is the mother of the pink slip. That was pretty good. I came up right out of the thing there. But nevertheless, I was once in a while, you know, you get down. So I went, I came across this LP, and occasionally when I'm feeling really down, I go into this secretary's palatial suite, and I ask permission from her, which you have to do in very, very polite tones, if I can play something on her enormous $1,200 custom-built hi-fi stereo set, which came with her office. Incidentally, it's done in Philippine teak wood. It's kind of nice. I might add that speaker enclosure, the left speaker enclosure, is bigger than our whole office. Okay? So she gets a damn good sound out of it. So I put the record on there, and she gives me maybe 4 or 5 minutes that I can play it. So I put the record on, and I turn it up, and I love to hear this thing. I just sit there, see, and I put earphones on. I hear both sides. See? This is the theme music to the march of Alexander the Great through Persia. That's what it is. Oh, my God. I mean, I could feel myself growing when I put this on. Listen. Camel train with the soldiers stretched out behind me. And all the panoply of the ancient world, and I am Alexander the Great, surveyor of the world that was known to the ancients, and the conqueror of that world. Oh, wow. Hey, wait a minute. Now, that was pretty good. That was Alexander, right? Would you please give me Attila the Hun? This is one of my favorite ones. This is when I really get bugged. Give me Attila. I mean, I've always vaguely admired Attila the Hun. Wouldn't you just like to once... isn't there, I would say, maybe 7 or 8 people in your life that hold some kind of cudgel over your existence? And almost everybody. You know, even the late Dwight Eisenhower said that. You know, here he is. He's a 5-star general. And Patton or somebody came in to see Ike. This is a famous moment. Patton came in and says, I've got to have more tanks. And at that point, Ike said, excuse me, General, but we have no more tanks. And this is an actual incident that occurred during the invasion of the lowlands or wherever it was. And at that point, Patton says, what do you mean you've got no tanks? You've got to get them. At that point, Eisenhower laid his famous one. He says, look, he says, I work for people like you. I've got a boss. And he just ain't listening. And that kind of threw Patton. I mean, the idea that a 5-star general has a boss. I mean, even General MacArthur got fired.
So, you know, none of us are safe. If they can do that, I mean, where are you going to go? So whenever I'm particularly being ground under heel by little short guys with bristly mustaches and gold-rimmed glasses, and this place is filled with them, whenever I'm particularly being ground under heel, see, and I can't remember names. That's what even bothers me even more than anything else. Of course, it's mutual. So, nevertheless, I like to put on my theme of Attila the Hun's ravaging of the Western world. This is Attila the Hun coming down out of the mountains with his avenging horde. I could just see me squatting on that Mongolian pony. You know those little short, tough, mad-looking ponies, the ones with all the fur on them? And I've got this bearskin rug that I'm wearing, and my hair is a matted mass. And it's filled with the rancid butter like we Attila ravaging Huns wear. You know, they wore their hair with rancid butter in it. And I'm coming down out of the Kurdish mountains, riding my Mongolian pony. My Mongolian pony. And I've got this gigantic club that has bronze studs sticking out of it. And I'm riding down, and I'm going to get the Western world one more. Attila the Hun rides again. By God. Now, you have to speak in Attila the Hun terms. Now, I have invented my Attila the Hun language. Hello, Fire! We have just ridden like mad through a Kurdish village, ravaging and raping as we go. And now I'm taking my ease in my goatskin tent. I have just dismissed the 17 Nubian handmaidens which have been brought to me. And I'm chewing on a haunch of camel. Yes, which is charred on the outside, but dripping blood from the inside. I can see my faithful servant, Kadal, outside the tent, sharpening my 1,700-pound broadsword. And then, just because of the sheer exuberant moment and the realization of my place in history, I scream the fierce cry of the avenging Hunnish hordes. Miles around, peasants cower in the undergrowth. The crowned heads of Europe know that the time is running short. Oh, hell, back to reality. Oh, wow. All right. Okay, rub it in. There's a lesson in that for all of us. No matter how high you go, there's always a comeuppance at the end. One pays one's debt to eternity, ultimately. And what's worse, they do not take Bank AmeriCard when you arrive at that final desk presided over by the eternal judge of us all. You cannot look up at St. Peter and say, look, I'd like to put it on my American Express card. I know that I owe a debt to the world.